BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's Tuesday, the 30th of November, the last day of the month, 7:06 in the morning. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. But before that, let's recap how markets closed yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
So markets breathed a sigh of relief despite Omicron, and US markets actually closed up in the green. So the Dow was up 0.7%, S&P 500 up 1.3%, and Nasdaq was up 1.9%. Meanwhile, in Asia, it was still in the red. Nikkei was down 1.6%, Hang Seng was down 1%, Shanghai was marginally flat, Straits Times Index in Singapore down 1.4%, while the FBM KLCI was relatively flat. It was only down 0.1%.
That's interesting. I think the glove stocks helped FBM KLCI.
It's also because, Philip, we remain one of the most unloved markets. Yeah. We were already down 7%. So
not much more down.
Yeah, it's relative, right? We didn't have a great year, so there isn't much to sell, even if you were looking to lock in some gains.
Such a Grinch.
Well, joining us on the line for some thoughts on what's moving global markets, we have Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for joining us this morning. So Fed Chairman Jerome Powell admitted that that Omicron poses a risk to the twin mandate of full employment and stable prices. Do you think this will change the pace of tapering and rate hikes?
No, at this point, we don't see any change to the Fed tapering. In fact, there's more talk of the tapering happening at a faster pace than a slower pace. So the variant obviously is a concern, but when you look at the underlying momentum in the U.S. economy, when it's retail sales, capital expenditures, and so forth, it's a good head of steam. So tapering is still on the table, probably faster than people expect.
But Joey, maybe US, I think there's more clarity, but how about those in the UK, Canada, you know, New Zealand, Australia, where they were thinking of raising interest rates? Are they now putting that on pause?
I heard the question, but raising interest rates, I mean, I think the Fed, you know, we talked about before, the Fed has pulled forward its rate hike schedule. I don't think that's changing. You saw a little of the variant, maybe more, you know, deflation, less inflation, but I can't tell you how red hot this economy here in the United States is. I mean, people are out spending, they're going to entertainment, ball games, retail sales are through the roof, and so forth. So I think the Fed still has a very difficult job in front of them, variant and no variant.
And Joe, we look at markets, right? We know on Friday it was a very bad day in US, but it has somewhat recovered last night. But where do you think markets are heading? Is it going to be a very volatile December?
I think it'll be volatile because we have to, you know, we're looking for science to give us some guidance about how this is transmitted, how deadly, hospitalization. But the early signs are encouraging. But remember, seasonally, December and January are some of the strongest months for the S&P 500 or Dow. So don't sell out of this rally. If you're going to sell, sell in January, not now, because the seasonal flows, whether it's December and January, are very strong. So yes, I still believe in Christmas. Santa Claus is coming, so don't sell out.
I'm waiting for Santa to come as well. But, you know, I guess one gift that's kept on giving is actually the vaccine companies like Moderna and Pfizer. Now, they've had a blockbuster year in 2021. And so with the pandemic seemingly far over, perhaps with the slight exception of Omicron happening, will vaccine companies see their stellar run continue in 22 then?
I mean, I think they will, but, you know, we got a level set, right? I mean, no one should expect the returns in 22 like they were in 21. Same with healthcare. But, you know, as we've learned, the variants are going to pop up. They're going to come back. We're going to need a booster shot. So stay along with healthcare because I think we've learned anything. You know, the public health sector is very precarious. We need the equipment. Science will lead the way. So I think there's a healthy appreciation for healthcare being long, right? We used to trade healthcare. Now, I just stay long in big names because the science and the technology, healthcare is going to be needed as we go deeper into this decade.
And turning our attention to Europe then, even before Omicron emerged, a rise in virus cases resulted in partial lockdowns that we see in Austria and the Netherlands. Now Germany might follow suit. How do you think this is going to impact GDP growth in the Eurozone this year?
Well, you can see it in the stock market. It's a little pullback here. It's choppy. It's very choppy. You know, Europe is stop-go. The good news, the Economic Recovery Fund the money is now reaching the nations they're spending it. I think the ECB is more on a holding pattern. Maybe they won't taper as fast as the U.S. So we're not looking for this variant and the associated lockdowns to derail Europe, the Eurozone in particular. I mean, let's face it. You see the protests in Austria. People are tired of being locked down. But do lockdowns really work? And I think this is a big issue for policymakers to think about in terms of hospitalizations and travel. So I'm not looking for this to derail the Eurozone recovery going into 22.
Meanwhile, Joe, I want to talk about oil. It's been a rather volatile, let's say, five trading days. So West Texas Intermediate crude has bounced back up at $70 a barrel. But we do know OPEC and their friends are meeting on Thursday. What are your expectations here?
Well, you know, geopolitically, that's the big story. It's amazing how, you know, the United States releasing reserves of oil, other countries as well. OPEC and Russia being defiant in the face of that. So there's a real geopolitical tug of war going here. But I think at the end of the day, you could see $100 oil in 22 at some point, because when this economy snaps back with the rest of the world, there's just a lot of demand out there still. And I know we're going to the green revolution, but it's still brown. We're driven by fossil fuels. That's not going to change. So we're still overweight energy. We still like commodities. So, you know, this geopolitical, you know, tension point between OPEC plus one versus the United States and some Asian producers, consumers, is very interesting to see how this plays out.
But how would you play this theme, Joe? How would you buy it? Would you, for investors, how can they get exposure to what you just said?
I mean, I look at some of these, whether it's, you know, I'm not recommending these stocks. It's a big oil company, particularly the big Western European U.S. oil stock. A lot of cash, giving it back in dividends. They're not doing the capital expenditures. Some of them are, you know, looking at going carbon neutral. That's one way. Another way is agricultural commodities, water ETFs, the metals related to the EV revolution. So there's various ways to play this. But the tensions in the commodity markets, energy markets, it's going to be quite interesting because, as we all know, oil at the end of the day is a political commodity. So the politicians get involved and make it very interesting.
Well, just shifting from one tension to another, which is the geopolitical pressure between the United States and China over Taiwan, we saw these U.S. lawmakers head over to Taiwan and call it the Republic of Taiwan. China responded by sending these missile fighters across the board. You know, how does this affect the relationship going forward between the U.S. and China? Do you think Biden will be able to keep on with that competitive stance that he's taken in view of Taiwan's importance in the semiconductor industry?
I mean, that's a great question, because in a sense that Taiwan is important, but what's more important is for the United States to increase its own semiconductor capacity here in the United States. And Samsung's going to open a plant in Arizona, some of the Taiwan semiconductors as well. But we still have this Innovation Act still rolling its way through Congress that could bolster the semiconductor industry here in the United States. So I guess my point is the best defense for the United States, you know, is not sending delegates to Taiwan. It's beefing up our own capacity here at home. And that's exactly what China's doing, right? China wants to be self-sufficient in semiconductors in a couple of years, and we should be thinking along those same lines. I hate to see that decoupling, but that right now, that seems kind of like a cold, hard reality.
Joe, thanks very much for your comments this morning. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, capping our conversation with a look at developments in the semiconductor industry and how the different parties are reacting to the U.S.-China tensions, which have been prolonged even across two different administrations.
Yeah, I don't think this U.S.-China trade war is ever going to end. And it's not just a trade war. It's gone beyond that, right?
Yeah.
But in a way, do we, you know, I'm always curious, how do we benefit from this? You know, we talked about the substitution effect a lot pre-COVID era. And, you know, I wonder, as Malaysia, how are we going to get this FDI? Come here and build a semicon factory.
It reminds me of my conversation with the Phison Electronics CEO, Dato' Phua Kin Seng, and he said that they themselves were trying to navigate this U.S.-China balance. And it's really about courting both of them,
yeah,
being nice to both of them and just being friends with both sides, you know, and just kind of being humble about it.
Well, being part of Southeast Asia is very interesting because generally U.S. has very established allies across, right, circling China. But Southeast Asia is very interesting because there are those who are very pro-United States, like Philippines and such. And there are those that are actually a bit more closer to China, like Thailand and Myanmar.
Is Philippines anymore still pro-USA, though?
They were very pro-China in the beginning.
Yeah,
but then recently,
right?
Over the South China Sea, Duterte has turned quite strident and against China.
I feel like they flip-flop depending on what day of the week it is. It could be animosity one day and it could be friendly the other.
Frenemies.
Exactly.
Maybe that's the strategy. Keep everyone on their toes, right?
Frenemy strategy. Got it.
But in any case, it's 7:19 in the morning. We're taking a quick break. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with The Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.